content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to have some fun at the beach. And everybody probably has different reasons for enjoying the beach. And just over a year ago, after completing construction of an enclosed porch on my house, we chose to add some river rock to the landscape in the areas around the foundation. And one day I happened to notice that one rock had some unusual markings. And while not officially confirmed, it appears at some point someone was trying to use this oval-shaped stone to make a tool of some kind. And I would love to know, of course, the origin of the rock and follow that journey. But it's just a kind of a brief description of what we're going to encounter in our first article. And it's headlined, The Odyssey Behind Your Beachcombing Treasures. And it's written by Aaron Stuckelberg and was published in the July 13, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. As the editor's subhead reads, Discover the many types of objects you may find in the sand and where they come from. The next time you walk the shoreline, take a look at what's under your toes. You may find inspiration for your upcoming art project or the remains of an ancient predator. The simple act of beachcombing, when a person searches the beach for items of interest, can lead to discoveries that become prized possessions or raw material for creative pursuits. But it's not just about collecting. The objects have an origin story, and their journey to shore can be told through their shapes, textures, and colors. Driftwood. When wood meets water, an incredible transformation takes place. Organisms such as bivalves, bacteria, and fungi remove organic material, hollowing the timber and making it lighter. Sand, wind, and water further erodes the wood as it travels through rivers and oceans. The sun dries and bleaches the wood once it reaches land. Driftwood can be considered a natural and renewable resource. Artists value its shape and texture in sculptures or furniture. In some cases, it can also help us understand oceans. In one study, scientists used previously frozen driftwood to discover changes in the circulation of Arctic Ocean currents. Then we have shells. A vast range of creatures survive the sea encased in protective armor. Gastropods, such as sea snails, have one outer shell, while bivalves, such as oysters, scallops, and mussels, have two. As they grow, these animals use proteins and minerals to build their shells from the outside, leaving rings that can reveal their age. Once the creatures die, the shells are dislodged and wash ashore with the tide. Beachcombers may find other types of shells, too, the parts of crustaceans or empty shark egg cases known as mermaid's purses that resemble dark, alien-like pods. Throughout history, shells have been used as tools, jewelry, and currency. During the banking crisis of the Great Depression, drugstores in California used clamshells as change when cash was in short supply. The clamshells would circulate among individuals, acquiring signatures along the way, until cash became available and the clamshell could finally be redeemed. American indigenous tribes used shells for decorative and ceremonial purposes. On the East Coast, the Wampanoag created elaborate belts of white and purple beads that were carved from hard-shelled clams. When threaded together, these beads also served as communication or compensation. Now we have fossils. Beaches and lakes are filled with relics of time. If an organism dies and is quickly buried in sediment, it can become fossilized. Animals without skeletons are harder to preserve because they decompose faster. But animals with harder organic materials, such as shells and shark teeth, may leave an imprint. Over time, maybe millions of years, sediment layers build up, burying the fossils. But eventually, as sea levels rise and fall, those fossils become exposed on land. Currents and waves erode cliffs and shorelines, further revealing fossils. Rivers can also deposit sediment abundant in fossils onto a beach. Then we have man-made objects. Not everything you find on a beach is natural. Millions of pounds of trash is collected from beaches every year. When the nonprofit environmental group Surfrider Foundation removed more than 170,000 pounds of trash from U.S. coastlines in 2021, it found a majority of the waste was made from plastic. Then we have sea and beach glass. Now, sea glass from bottles, jars, or ceramics finds its way into waterways and oceans, giving the beach a few colorful specks of sparkle. Currents tumble and smash broken pieces of glass against rock and sand, rounding off sharp corners and forming smooth shapes. Sea glass is formed when saltwater slowly dissolves additives in glass, creating a frosted surface. It's different from beach glass, which is clear and comes from freshwater. Finding authentic sea or beach glass is becoming rare as the number of collectors who beachcomb for the colorful pieces, which may be used to make art or jewelry, has increased. Recycling has also helped to reduce the amount of glass discarded in water. And before you go, beachcombing can be done any time of the year. Lakes and rivers, of course, are good destinations also. In some places, you may have better luck searching in the winter than the summer. You might have less competition. And you can check for specific rules and regulations before removing any items from a beach. Follow the seven principles of Leave No Trace, which includes respecting wildlife and causing minimal disturbance to the land. And know your tide schedule. Your best bet is to go at low tide when the beach is more exposed. You can bring a bucket or container to carry your discoveries with you. By the way, Judy Vitaskaya also contributed this report, which again was written by Aaron Stuckelberg, senior graphics reporter at the Washington Post. And he was part of a team at the Post that won the 2020 Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting for the series 2C Beyond the Limit. So some interesting writing there from Aaron and company. Well, our next article not only applies to beachcombing, but also to other activities while at the beach. From naked butts to cigarette butts, you need to know these North Carolina beach rules. It's written by Martha Quillen and appeared in the July 15, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer, where Ms. Quillen has been a longtime writer. North Carolina's 300 miles of public ocean beaches attract more than 11 million visitors each year. The snippish tone on beach communities' social media pages this summer suggests some beachgoers bring everything on vacation but their manners. People from away, dingbatters as they're joked about on Ocracoke Island, may misbehave just because they don't know any better. Most of the more than two dozen oceanfront municipalities in the state have ordinances governing beach behavior, meaning violators can be fined even if they rarely are. There are variations, so it's worth checking the website of the town where you're headed before you dig a crater in the sand or plan a seaside wedding by firelight. To quote the town of Emerald Isle's motto, "Nice matters." Here's how to make sure you'll be welcome back next year, and what to take and from the beach. And here's a list of things that Ms. Quillen has put together. Pets are allowed, and sometimes at some beaches, but may be restricted by time of year or time of day. For example, Sunset Beach town leaders grump that it's no fun to leave wet, sandy dogs shaking on you while you're sunbathing. And they proclaim their stand-up free pup-free zone from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on the Friday before Memorial Day until Labor Day. Now, all beaches require owners to collect and dispose of their pets' poop, which can be bagged and dropped gingerly into trash cans near crossovers. And next we have a photo that was taken by Travis Long for the News and Observer. It's showing a vacationer tossing a ball for her dog in the surf along the beach at the Outer Banks. Now we move on to other items to take to and from the beach. Umbrellas, tents, and other sunshades are allowed on North Carolina beaches, but this year in particular, people are complaining of a lack of regard for personal space. If there's room, don't stake your shade so close to someone else that you can tell what brand of sunscreen they use. Now, beach gear is almost never allowed to be left on the strand, rather, overnight, and you can be tossed by lifeguards or other town workers. If your cabana collapsed, your umbrella inverted, or your chair finally rusted through, jam it angrily into the trash barrel yourself. Also, leave room for emergency vehicles and beach patrols, which need about 10 feet of space in front of the dune line for their four-wheel drive trucks. Leave no trace, taking with you everything you brought to the beach. You can also take all the seashells you can carry, as long as none contain live animals. Now, the Travis Long picture, it shows beachgoers packing Wrightsville Beach. This was in August of 2020. And then we continue with our list of do's and don'ts. Don't be a dingbatter. Stay off the dunes. Walk only on established crossover paths to avoid destroying vegetation. It holds in place the sand that helps protect barrier islands and storms, or from storms, I should say. Smoking is prohibited on Wrightsville Beach, but allowed on many other beaches. Placing cigarette butts in the sand is littering. It's also nasty and prohibited at all North Carolina beaches. Alcohol consumption on the beach is prohibited at Wrightsville Beach, but allowed at Nag's Head and many others. All beaches prohibit glass containers, and some also ban cans. Lifeguards aren't posted at all beaches, and even where they are available, they can't watch everybody all the time. Don't swim alone, and don't let children play in the water far from your reach. Take note of colored beach flags that indicate high risk of hazards. A single red flag usually means a strong rip currents are present. Double red means don't go in the water except to wade along the edge. Then we have a photo taken by Mark Cruz in the town of Emerald Isle. It's a red flag flying recently at Emerald Isle, warning beachgoers to expect dangerously strong currents and rough seas if they swim in the ocean. Nudity is not allowed on public North Carolina beaches, no matter how few people are around to see it. Rangers who patrol beaches within the Cape Hatteras and Cape Lookout National Seashores enforce state law, which requires male and female genitalia to be covered. Under state law, breasts and butt cheeks are not considered genitalia. However, many municipalities have ordinances requiring tops for women, though not for men. Digging in the sand is therapeutic up to a point. Holden Beach and some others prohibit digging more than a foot deep and require all excavators fill their holes back in. Big cavities left on the beach become hazards for nesting turtles or sea turtles, and human pedestrians and emergency vehicles can also be affected. Sea turtles are a protected species. It's illegal to harass the animals or disturb their nest. If you see volunteers gathered around a marked nest, they're expecting it to boil and the babies to emerge, and you're welcome to sit and watch. Now, the National Park Service has provided a photo here, and it says a green turtle hatchling reaches the ocean at Cape Lookout National Seashore. The turtle nesting season runs from mid-May through August in North Carolina. More rules here. Nighttime beach walks are fun, but during sea turtle nesting season, this runs mid-May through August, wildlife experts say flashlights can confuse the majestic mothers and their tiny hatchlings. Driving on the beach generally is not allowed during the summer tourist season, but some beaches allow four-wheel drive vehicles on the sand by permit in the fall and winter. Beach weddings are extra romantic and photogenic, but may require a permit from local government. Then you have fireworks are illegal at most North Carolina beaches. Bonfires are also prohibited on most beaches, though a few allow the use of gas grills. And we conclude with a couple of more photos. Travis Long took a couple. One, visit Wrightsville Beach for blue waters and quiet beaches and make sure to support locals while you're there. Another photo shows the Sunset Beach Pier jutting out into the Atlantic Ocean. North Carolina's coast home to 19 fishing piers. Wow. And then we have a National Park Service photo. A female loggerhead crawls back to the ocean at Cape Lookout National Seashore. Two loggerheads already have nested on North Carolina beaches this year, and I'm sure that number has climbed since that article was published. Well, our next article, let's see here, is beach-related and headlined, Cause of Shape-Shifting Marks in Outer Banks Horses is Unclear. Outer Banks Horses is Unclear. Now, it includes a photo with this caption, The strange markings change shape over time, observers say. The photo is from the Corolla Wild Horse Fund, and the article is written by Mark Price of the Charlotte Observer and appeared in the Observer's sister paper, The News and Observer, on July 16, 2023. Primitive markings are being reported on some wild horses roaming North Carolina's Outer Banks, and the cause can't be easily explained. It may be a rare genetic trait shared by one of the oldest herds in North America, according to the Corolla Wild Horse Fund. Every once in a while, we get a call from someone concerned about the markings on a horse's back, thinking they're injured, Corolla herd manager Meg Puckett wrote on Facebook. Sometimes it's poop when the cattle egrets that ride along as the horses graze, but most often it's markings. We always assume it was scarring from breeding, but you see them both on stallions and mares, and they are patterned in ways scars usually aren't. Another theory was that it might be scarring from bacterial infections like rain rot. However, the Corolla horses barely experience such things, Puckett said. So, what is it? In most cases, the white areas on the horse's backs grow and change over time, which leads us to believe it's actually a very rare type of marking called lacing puck, it says. It's a very primitive type of marking. Lacing has also been observed in some domesticated horses on the mainland, according to I Heart Horses Incorporated. There is some debate as to whether lacing is a rare genetic coat pattern or a type of scarring. There are horses, however, that develop the pattern without any kind of injury, and it seems to be passed down between families as a recessive gene, the site reports. It could also be a rare coat pattern that can change size and pattern as the horse ages. Puckett says the markings are one more interesting footnote on the genetic history of the herd. The Outer Banks are home to two large herds, one in Corolla and one on the Shackelford Banks inside Cape Lookout National Seashore. Historians say the horses are descendants of Mustangs brought to North America by early settlers, starting with the Spanish. The Corolla Wild Horse Fund is working on a DNA survey of the northern herd and has so far tested 150 horses. Data collected in the survey has enabled the nonprofit to determine lineage of the foals born in recent years. Wow. Lots of interesting things at the beach, huh? Well, let's see. We're going to continue our beach journey, but this time a little more serious topic. Sea level rise along North Carolina coast picks up pace. This article written by Adam Wagner, and it appeared in the April 14, 2023 issue of the News and Observer. And we're going to start with a photo caption. A new study from researchers at Tulane University found that accelerated sea level rise since 2010 is partially due to global warming and partially due to natural cycles. Here, waves from the Atlantic Ocean are shown flooding Seagull Street in Rodanthe. Adam Wagner, again, is the writer, and let's begin with his article. Accelerating sea level rise along the Atlantic coast from Cape Hatteras south to the Gulf of Mexico can be partially attributed to human-caused climate change and partly to natural cycles, according to the lead author of a study published the week of April 19th. The study, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications, found that since 2010, sea levels from Cape Hatteras to the U.S.-Mexico border have averaged increases of about 10 millimeters a year, up from a long-term average of 1 to 2 millimeters a year. Researchers found that about 40% of the accelerated sea level rise seen since 2010 can be attributed to global warming caused by emissions of greenhouse gases from humans, while 60% is caused by natural cycles of ocean currents and winds. But they caution that those findings still stress the importance of limiting greenhouse gas emissions in preparing for higher seas. These natural cycles have always been there, but now with the man-made acceleration of sea level rise, they are more risky for our coastline, said Sonke Duggendorf, an assistant professor of Tulane University's Department of River, Coastal Science, and Engineering, who was one of the study's lead researchers. The paper suggests that the natural cycle is likely to reverse itself in the next decade or so. Even then, Duggendorf said, greenhouse gas emissions that have already occurred mean that global warming would continue and seas will continue to rise, only at a slower pace, and the natural patterns that lead to higher seas are certain to return. Debate about just how much of the acceleration seen along the Atlantic and Gulf Coast in recent years should not detract from the fact that humans play a key role, said Philip Breshnahan, a University of North Carolina Wilmington oceanographer who had reviewed the Tulane study. Some bad actors are really good at misleading people into looking at any kind of debate or uncertainty and using that to political advantage, Breshnahan told the News and Observer. Global and local reports in recent years have joined the overwhelming amount of scientific evidence pointing to emissions of greenhouse gases from human activities as the main driver of global warming. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reported this year that humans have unequivocally caused global warming. Breshnahan noted that another recent paper, as well as at least two that are available in preprint, have tried to tease out the causes of the acceleration in sea level rise seen along the Atlantic and Gulf Coast, and he said they all have one common theme. All of these papers are saying the same thing. Humans are to blame for a lot of it, and we need to change that to improve everyone's well-being, Breshnahan said. Paul Liu, a North Carolina State University oceanographer, said he's familiar with the Tulane researchers' work and is confident of their methods. Liu also noted that subsidence of the coast along the Outer Banks leaves that area more vulnerable to sea level rise. No matter how the results are the same, the water level is rising, he said, rising faster than we expected. Understanding what causes sea level rise to accelerate sea is important, Dankendorf said, and in order to be able to anticipate future times when the natural cycles will drive seas higher than expected. Warming caused by human emissions of gases that warm the atmosphere, he said, will exacerbate that cycle when it drives seas higher. That could mean more severe hurricanes and tropical storms whose impacts are coming on top of waters that are already risen. If that sea level is higher, the storms can be more destructive due to storm surge because they build up on a higher base level, Dagendorf said. In North Carolina, the National Hurricane Center reported that 2018's Hurricane Florence brought a storm surge of 8 to 11 feet around the mouth of the Neuse River. Some of the most significant flooding was seen in downtown Newbern, near where the Trent River flows into the Neuse. The rising sea levels also affect so-called sunny day flooding, floods that happen without heavy rains or a similar cause. Oregon Inlet Marina, for instance, experienced about one sunny day flood a year in 2000. In 2021, there were five such floods, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported, and the federal agency projects between 110 and 155 days with such flooding by 2050. Much of the sea level rise that's occurring today is coming from a century of emissions, Dagendorf added, meaning that sea levels will continue to rise even if greenhouse gas emissions were to rapidly plummet. Even if we get to net zero carbon dioxide emissions, sea level doesn't stop rising. If we stopped emissions, it would rise less, which is important, but it wouldn't stop. So we need to adapt, he says. And by the way, this story was produced with financial support from One Earth Fund in partnership with Journalism Funding Partners. It's part of an independent journalism fellowship program. And the News and Observer adds that it maintains full editorial control of their work. So give you an idea of that little project there. Well, whether at the beach or places inland, you can always find a place to enjoy ice cream, right? Well, that said, our next article says five North Carolina ice cream shops rank among the nation's favorites. It's written by Simone Jasper. This appeared in the July 15, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. And we're going to begin with a caption to a photo taken by Angela Casanas of the News and Observer. Zara Mahir is pictured at Andia's Homemade Ice Cream on Ryan Road in Cary. The shop's Green Level Church Road location ranks as one of the best places to get ice cream. So, a little bit far from the beach, but close by for those who live in the Triangle, right? Well, whether you like your ice cream topped with sprinkles or stuffed into a cone, you may not have to travel far for a satisfying frozen treat. That's because North Carolina is home to five of the nation's best places to go for dessert, according to results that the review website Yelp published in June. The places that made it onto the list of top 100 ice cream shops. And here we go. Surf and Spoon, Nag's Head, ranked 15th. And then Sugar Koi and Cary at number 17. Ozzy's Ice Cream in Greensboro was at 20th. Boom Bilotti's Homemade Ice Cream in Wilmington, number 44. And Andia's Ice Cream in Cary was ranked at 81. Now, to create the list, Yelp studied ice cream shops across the country and ranked them using a number of factors, including the total volume and ratings of reviews that customers left from January 2022 through March 2023. For ice cream shop chains, the website told McClatchy News in an email it focused on the highest rated location. Now, what makes the North Carolina ice cream shop special? Well, among North Carolina shops that made it on the Yelp's list, Surf and Spoon ranked the highest, which might not come as a surprise given that it was named the state's best place for ice cream in 2022. Yelp users have given the Outer Banks shop praise for its ice cream sandwiches, which come in flavor combinations that range from chocolate and coffee to lemon and blueberry lavender. Grab a seat on the porch, at a picnic table, or inside at the U-shaped bar where you can catch a surfing flick on the flat screen and admire surfboards hanging from the ceiling, Yelp wrote, adding that customers should also expect to see dollar bills wedged in the shop's walls before they're donated to annual coastal event called Surfing for Autism. Also, landing spots on the list were two Triangle area favorites, Sugar Koi on Kilmaine Drive and Andy's Homemade Ice Cream on Green Level Church Road, those shops in Cary, west of Raleigh. Both received rave online reviews for their scoops and cones, helping them earn more than 4 out of 5 stars on Yelp. Now, rounding out the fan-favorite North Carolina destinations were Ozzie's Ice Cream in Greensboro and Boom Bilotti's Homemade Ice Cream on Military Cutoff Road in Wilmington. On Yelp, several customers said they love the shop's customer service and flavor choices. If ice cream isn't your go-to treat, there may still be a way to satisfy your sweet tooth in North Carolina. In May, 5 of the state's donut shops ranked among the best in the United States, according to McClatchy News. On the more recent list, the nation's number one place to get ice cream was Coneflower Creamery, and this is located in the heart of the U.S., Omaha, Nebraska. Wow. So there you go, my friends. Some interesting news about ice cream to whet your appetite, I hope, if you got hungry doing all that beach travel today. In our remaining time, let's take a quick look at another popular coastal destination, Nag's Head, which we've mentioned. As found in the June, July, August 2023 issue of AAA Living magazine, lots to do and see at Nag's Head, of course. Nag's Head Wood Preserve, 5 trails in this preserve lead you through the maritime forest and an interdunal landscape, revealing hidden ponds, wildlife, and glimpses into the past. Again, there's, of course, Jockey's Ridge, which is not too far away. Great place to go. We have fishing piers. Cast a line off one of these popular fishing piers in Nag's Head, the 1,000-foot Jeanette's Pier or the 750-foot Nag's Head Fishing Pier in South Nag's Head. And then we mentioned Jockey's Ridge. It's now a state park, and you can head to this park for a hang gliding lesson. You can take your first flight off these enormous dunes in a traditional hang glider or in a recreation of the Wright Flyer, the Wright Brothers Museum, of course, a memorial not too far away. Then we have Eat and Stay. We have Blue Moon Beach Grill, and whether you stop at a AAA-approved Blue Moon Beach Grill for lunch or for dinner, you're in for a treat. Fish sandwiches, cheese steaks, fish and chips, and a heaping platter of fried oysters, some of the selections on offer there. Another Nag's Head eatery, Bass Night's Lone Cedar Cafe, for dinner with a view of the Roanoke Sound. Reserve a table at this AAA-approved restaurant. Local seafood graces every plate and platter, and with specials like Friday night shrimp feast, you'll find plenty to eat. And then we have the Holiday Inn Express Nag's Hunt Oceanfront. Make your beachside base camp at this AAA three-diamond property. Plenty of oceanfront rooms, freshwater pool, and a great location for family. So there you go. Lots of things to do there at Nag's Head on the Outer Banks. And that, my friends, is going to bring us to the end of today's journey around the beaches of the Carolinas. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you've will plan to be with us again next week. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Again, that is ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.